Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon today. Advocates for the disabled held rallies recently in San Diego and Sacramento, calling for funding cuts to be restored to save vital services. We'll tell you which San Diego legislators have been responsive to those needs and which ones have turned a deaf ear so far. Hear about a new open justice database that California's Attorney General has set up to enable the public to track arrest records as well as deaths in police custody and killings of police officers statewide. We'll also tell you about a recall of cucumbers linked to a San Diego-based company. Then on Green Scene, hear about actions taken by the California Environmental Protection Agency to require a warning label on a commonly used pesticide that the state agency says can cause cancer. We'll also have an update for you on that Kentucky clerk jailed for refusing to issue marriage licenses. And from Sacramento, learn about a new law giving rights to homeowners to install artificial turf without fear of reprisal from homeowners associations. On our Sounds of History, we'll have a very special look back at Hurricane Kathleen, the worst tropical storm ever to hit our region on this 39th anniversary of the devastating storm, including an eyewitness account of the flooding that destroyed one local town. And on the lighter side of the news, we'll tell you about a giant pumpkin contest in Ramona. Our sports reporter, Liz Alper, stopped into a fans' meet and greet with the San Diego Gulls this week, and she scored an interview with the Gulls' head coach as the team returns to San Diego after a long absence. From the County News Center, hear disaster preparedness tips as we enter wildfire season. From Public News Service today, on the anniversary of the devastating 9/11 attacks on our nation, we'll have some highlights of national news across America. Then on Destination East County, hear about some fun fall festivals coming up across East County, from Julian's Apple Days to the Saquon Powwow, from a barbecue at Santee Lakes to El Cajon's Oktoberfest to a brand new fall festival in La Mesa. This weekend marks the opening of Hairspray, a production taking stage in Point Loma by a local theater group that's based right here in East County. Today, we'll be replaying our newsmaker interviews with the founders of Visionary Youth Theater. We'll be talking about their Hairspray production and their social justice mission to help mentor and train economically disadvantaged young people in the performing arts. We'll wrap up our show with a look forward to winter weather conditions, and here's a hint, you may want to keep your umbrella handy. Plus, we'll have details on traffic trends across our region. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Over 24,000 people with developmental disabilities in San Diego and Imperial counties rely on state services to survive, and yet California's funding levels for such services have fallen to the lowest in the nation, according to the Association of Regional Center Agencies. While the cost of services has risen 30%, funding has lagged far behind. And yet a funding increase for services to the disabled was stripped out of the state budget this summer, and so far, state lawmakers have failed to act on emergency special session legislation that would restore funding to provide vital help to people with conditions such as Down's syndrome, cerebral palsy, and autism. On September 1st, hundreds of people rallied outside the San Diego office of Assembly Speaker Toni Atkins, urging her to take action, calling for a 10% increase in funding for developmental disability services across the board. Since then, Speaker Atkins' website has posted press releases about her efforts to save rhinoceroses from poaching and help immigrant crime victims and prisoners reentering society, but no comments have been released regarding her views on funding for the disabled since those recent rallies. On September 4th, an estimated 1,500 advocates for increasing funding for the developmentally disabled marched at the state capitol and paid visits to their legislators. The Lanterman Law requires funding of such services to assure that developmentally disabled people have appropriate care in California and help to remain independent. But the Lanterman Coalition, organizer of these rallies across the state urging a funding increase, says legislators have made that law a hollow promise by dropping funding from the budget.
According to the Lanterman Coalition's website, 65 state legislators signed a letter in May urging a 10% increase for developmental disabilities funding. Among San Diego's legislators, Democratic Senators Ben Wesso and Marty Block signed it, along with Republican Senator Joel Anderson. So did Assemblymembers Brian Jones, Brian Mainsheim, and Rocky Chavez, all Republicans. Conspicuously absent from that list are Speaker Tony Atkins, as well as Shirley Weber and Lorena Gonzalez, all Democrats. Mark Klaus is the president and CEO of Home of the Guiding Hands here in East County, which serves developmentally disabled people. He told East County Magazine, "To date, we have not had a response and or any communication from Speaker Atkins' office." He adds, "My understanding regarding why both Atkins and Shirley Weber did not sign onto the letter was due to their leadership positions, Atkins as the Speaker and Weber as the Chair of Appropriations. Both have stated that they support our cause, but to date, nothing has happened. We may be a priority, but we are definitely not the priority," he says. As for Lorena Gonzalez, Klaus states, "Gonzalez and her office have not shown any support and or commitment to individuals with developmental disabilities. I have reached out several times and have had zero response. It is a sad day when professional cheerleaders are more important than over 280,000 children, adolescents, and adults in California with developmental disabilities," he says, a reference to Assemblywoman Gonzalez's legislation to make cheerleading a recognized sport and help protect cheerleaders from injuries. Klaus says that Home of Guiding Hands' rate for reimbursement has been frozen for years and that staff members have not had raises because the state considers them entry-level minimum wage earners. He concludes, "This is such a sad commentary." A press release issued by the Lanterman Coalition confirms this gross underfunding is causing desperately needed programs like residential housing, home care, transportation, and job assistance to shut down, putting people with developmental disabilities at risk. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
For the first time ever, Californians can now find out how many deaths occur during arrests or while a suspect is in police custody. You can also learn how many police officers are killed or assaulted in the line of duty, as well as get info on arrests and bookings statewide. It's all part of a new statewide database called Open Justice, launched by California Attorney General Kamala Harris last week, complete with user-friendly tools and an online database. Harris says it's all part of being smart on crime by measuring effectiveness in the criminal justice system. She adds, "This initiative puts forward a common set of facts, data, and goals so that we can hold ourselves accountable and improve public safety. The California Department of Justice is proud to join with many in the law enforcement community to make our work more transparent." Recent events in California and across the nation have highlighted the need for better communication between law enforcement and the communities they are sworn to protect. In the coming months, the Open Justice information will be expanded further. Here are some key findings already available through the Open Justice program. Since 1980, an average of 10 law enforcement officer deaths have been reported per year. 180 deaths resulted from crimes against officers and 150 were accidental. Since 1980, 1 in 10 officers on the street were assaulted each year. That's 280,000 assaults against law enforcement officers total, or about 8,000 per year. There were 6,837 deaths of people in custody reported between 2005 and 2014, an average of about 685 deaths per year. About 61% of those deaths were from natural causes, but 14% were homicides by officers, and another 10% were due to suicide. Homicides, it should be noted, may be justifiable or non-justifiable, and no breakdown has yet been provided on this. Over half of deaths in custody, about 55%, were reported by the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, the state prison system. 23% were reported by county sheriffs and 15% by local police. But among local police forces, almost 70% of the deaths in custody were homicides, while sheriffs and the state prison system reported more deaths from natural causes and suicides. There's some good news in the Open Justice database. Over the last 30 years, property crimes and violent crimes reported have dropped by half. Men are 3.5 times more likely to be arrested than women. There are also large racial and ethnic disparities in arrest rates. The database shows that African Americans are the most likely to be arrested, while Asians have the lowest arrest rates. To view all of the data released, visit the Open Justice database on the California Department of Justice website at openjustice@doj.ca.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Ed Barena.
This is Liz Albert with news about the recall of cucumbers imported by a San Diego-based company. The cucumbers have been linked to a salmonella outbreak that has sickened 285 people in 27 states and killed a 99-year-old San Diego woman. A third of those who are ill have been hospitalized as the outbreak continues. Cucumbers imported from Mexico by Andrew and Williamson Fresh Produce, also known as A&W in San Diego, have been identified as a likely source, according to the county's Health and Human Services Department. Domestically grown garden cucumbers, English cucumbers, and Persian cucumbers are not linked to this outbreak. A&W has initiated a voluntary recall of all cucumbers sold under its limited edition label during the period from August 1st to September 3rd. If you bought these cucumbers, throw them away. If you have cucumbers and aren't sure where they're from, County Public Health Officer Dr. Wilma Wooten advises, when in doubt, throw it out. She adds that anyone with salmonella symptoms such as nausea, diarrhea, fever, and abdominal cramping should seek medical attention. Symptoms of salmonella generally occur 12 to 72 hours after eating tainted food, and illness can last 4 to 7 days. Most people will recover without treatment, but those at higher risk include children under age 5, adults over age 65, pregnant women, people with weak immune systems, or those with low acid levels in their stomachs. For more information, visit the Salmonella webpage at the Centers for Disease Control or the U.S. Food and Drug Administration site.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. California's Environmental Protection Agency has issued a notice of intent to label glyphosate, an herbicide that is the main ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup, as a carcinogen known to cause cancer. The public has until October 5th to comment on the proposal. Glyphosate has also been linked to a sharp drop in monarch butterfly populations across the nation, as well as to potential health impacts on humans. As glyphosate use has skyrocketed and eliminated milkweed from the agricultural fields, monarch's primary food source, the butterflies have declined by more than 80% in 20 years, according to the Center for Biological Diversity. A recent study on rats exposed to very low doses found adverse changes in the rats' livers and kidneys. Additionally, the World Health Organization has concluded that glyphosate is a probable carcinogen. If the EPA designation is approved, it would require that all products containing glyphosate carry warnings on labels. In addition, places where the herbicide is applied could be required to have notices posted to warn of exposure in advance, as Proposition 65 requires. Center for Biological Diversity scientist Nathan Donnelly, in a prepared statement, praised the EPA for taking steps to protect people and wildlife from a toxic chemical. He says more than 250 million pounds of glyphosate are used each year in the United States, and the science is clear that it's a threat to public health and countless wildlife species. World usage of glyphosate is at an all-time high. Its use increased more than 20-fold since 1990, largely due to the widespread adoption of crops, especially corn and soy, that are genetically engineered to withstand what would otherwise be fatal doses of glyphosate. Residue of the toxic chemical are now found on 90% of soybean crops. More use means more exposure, Donnelly concludes. It's nearly impossible for people to limit exposure to this toxin because it is so widespread. That's why we need much tighter controls on its use. Monsanto has insisted that its product is safe despite evidence to the contrary. The company claims the World Health Organization's data is flawed. Monsanto engages in intense lobbying and makes hefty campaign donations to politicians who have been reluctant to restrict genetically modified crops or use of glyphosate. But now California regulators have stepped in. Now with California leading the way in declaring the chemical a carcinogen, some health and environmental advocates hope the labeling will be the first step towards ultimately banning the chemical. as was done with DDT and other products found to endanger human health or wildlife.
This is Liz Albert with some national news. Kim Davis of Rowan County, Kentucky, a county clerk who refused to issue marriage licenses to gay and straight couples, was released from jail on Tuesday, accompanied by presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. She was met with hundreds of cheering supporters who sang Amazing Grace and God Bless America. Davis spent 5 days in jail, during which she was hailed as a hero by the religious right. U.S. District Judge David Bunning lifted her contempt order on Tuesday, saying that he was pleased with how Rowan County deputies were issuing licenses in her absence. However, she was told not to interfere with the issuing process any further. Davis was jailed on Thursday after being sued by two gay and two straight couples for refusing to issue any of the couple's marriage licenses. Her act of defiance comes 3 months after the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage across the country, citing God's authority and claiming that issuing licenses to gay couples would be a sin. Davis stopped issuing licenses in June. All but one of Davis's deputy clerks issued licenses to gay and straight couples in her absence. The exception was her son, Nathan Davis. When the contempt order was lifted, Judge Bunning requested updates every 2 weeks on the five clerks' compliance with his order.
Governor Jerry Brown has signed legislation sponsored by the San Diego County Water Authority that prohibits homeowners associations from banning artificial turf. Assembly Bill 349, authored by Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez of San Diego, takes effect immediately. Assemblymember Gonzalez issued this statement upon passage. Californians are making great strides to reduce their water use and hit aggressive benchmarks for conservation, and this new common sense law will give homeowners one more way to save as this drought continues. The grass may be fake, but the amount of water a homeowner can save by installing it is very real. The new law is important because irrigation accounts for more than half of a typical home's water use in California, and more than a quarter of the state's housing stock is in condos or other common interest developments typically governed by HOAs. Earlier legislation, supported by the Water Authority, prevented common interest developments from prohibiting low water use plants, including those used to replace lawns. Homeowners also can't be fined by HOAs if they cut back watering due to the emergency drought declaration statewide, except in communities using recycled water for landscape irrigation. Mark Weston, chair of the County Water Authority's Board of Directors, says, "We need every water conservation tool available during the current drought and for years to come. Thanks to Assemblymember Gonzalez, this broadly supported legislation ensures that residents in HOAs have the same freedom as other homeowners to choose how to save water outdoors." For more information about water use rules by community, along with details about drought conditions and conservation-related resources, you can visit wheninDrought.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting The Sounds of History on East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Exactly 39 years ago this week, Hurricane Kathleen struck our region, the most powerful tropical cyclone ever to hit San Diego and Imperial counties. With winds up to 90 miles an hour, Hurricane Kathleen dropped a foot of water on Mount Laguna and sent a wall of water 10 feet high and 40 feet wide rushing through the town of Ocotillo in neighboring Imperial Valley, destroying over 70% of the town. Another wave a mile high and 2.5 feet wide swept through Jacumba, demolishing a farmhouse there. The San Diego Union-Tribune said of the Ocotillo nightmare, there was no warning, just a sudden roar. The powerful storm killed 13 people in California and Mexico. It also washed out Interstate 8, crumbling the freeway and destroying a bridge at Meyer Creek, where a 600-foot-wide section of the freeway was wiped out, leaving a gully in its place about 40 feet deep. Eldo Sanders jumped in his truck to try and save people stranded in Painted Gorge out in Imperial Valley after hearing a call for help on his Citizens Band radio. He never made it. His truck was found overturned in mud, and his body was later found buried in a mud bank. Another resident of Ocotillo, John Patrick Riley, refused to evacuate his home. Rescuers from the Ocotillo Volunteer Fire Department found the 63-year-old man's body inside his home, which had flooded. An El Centro resident, William Mina, is believed to have died when his vehicle was swept off the Meyer Creek Bridge on Interstate 8 by a towering wall of water. Flooding and mudslides destroyed three bridges on the San Diego-Arizona Eastern Railway, ultimately leading to abandonment of that railway line. It smashed airplanes at desert airports and turned one plane on its nose in Yuma. A Salton Sea Resort area, Bombay Beach, was completely underwater. Authorities began referring to it as a lake. Most of the 14 cities in Imperial County were utterly inundated. Sheriff's deputies and the Navy airlifted residents out of areas west of El Centro, including an elderly woman trapped when water overflowed her bed. She was saved by sheriff deputies in a flatboat. In San Diego, the storm shut down a Padres game. Out in Imperial Valley, farmers suffered when at least 10,000 acres of sugar beets were wiped out along with many other crops. All routes out of Imperial County except for State Route 111 were shut down all at one time. 80 families were left homeless in Mexicali, and roofs blew off homes 600 miles south of San Diego. Hundreds of homes were destroyed across the region by the powerful storm, which caused $160 million in damage, ranking as one of the worst storms in California history. Alan Zangheim grew up on a ranch in Imperial Valley, and he recalls the flash flood that raced across the desert floor on September 9, 1976. The next morning, he remembers going outside with his dad, believing that the storm had passed. And then, he writes on his website, "We kept noticing some sunlight reflecting off the San Diego Mountains out towards the west. It was like a sparkle. My dad thought it was peculiar, and he said it looks like water. And we listened to the radio shortly thereafter and heard the flash flood warnings. My mom was scared and pretty insistent that we vacate the ranch, and we did. We returned to find out the next morning that a wall of water approximately 10 feet high swept across the Imperial Valley desert floor, wiping out the town of Ocotillo and killing some motorists who were unfortunate enough to be on Interstate 8 at the time the water came through. When we returned to our ranch, it was under 3 feet of water, and my dad's crops were ruined. It was due to this catastrophic incident that we sold our ranch and moved to the San Diego area," Zangheim recalls. He warns that due to the unique geography of Ocotillo, which sits on an alluvial fan below sea level, the same unfortunate events could very well happen again. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Attention, pumpkin patch owners! If you've got the great pumpkin growing in your patch, the Ramona Home Journal invites you to enter its Pick of the Patch contest and win cash prizes. The contest is open to pumpkins that weigh at least 100 pounds, grown by residents living in Ramona's 92065 zip code. Deadline to enter is September 18th, and you can find entry forms at ramonajournal.com. It's been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This is Liz Albert with the sports report for KNSJ. Many excited hockey fans came to the courtyard downtown on Saturday to meet Coach Dallas Aikens and other members of the San Diego Goals staff in a Q&A hosted by the voice of the Goals, Craig Elston. Live bands, including San Diego local Seeking Alpha, performed. Head Coach Aikens and other Goals staff members hosted a Q&A. When asked what adjustments he'll make coming from the NHL to the American League, Coach Aikens says,
"The National Hockey League is 100% focused on winning. And here in the American League, you still want to win, but you've got to develop your players. So we want our players to have success here. We want to win hockey games. But our main objective is to get these kids into the NHL with the Anaheim Ducks."
So this is our wedding album, and you can really see what a beautiful day it was. It was a really fun party.
It was the biggest day in Aaron Crable's life.
My husband John and I were married on October 20th, 2007.
But she can't look at these wedding pictures without remembering something else. Something that happened the very next day.
As many people know, that was the day before one of the largest wildfires in San Diego history.
The Witch Creek Fire. Wind-driven blazes roared across San Diego's backcountry, destroying over 600 homes, including one owned by the parents of Aaron's new husband. It was a family catastrophe.
My new mother-in-law left the house literally with the clothes on her back and her animals in her car.
Unfortunately, these stories are not uncommon. During disasters, people sometimes lose everything, a lifetime of documents, memories, treasured belongings. In the panic of an evacuation, sometimes people just aren't prepared.
I don't believe that having 15 minutes and being unprepared is going to allow you to make good decisions.
When an emergency like a fire is happening is not the time to decide what your most important possessions are. The County of San Diego says, think ahead of time. Create a grab-and-go kit. Aaron has one now.
Insurance documents, photographs. It has a key to our safety deposit box and things that basically are irreplaceable. Something that I keep in a convenient space if we needed to leave the home quickly.
Remember also, ATM machines may not be working, so keep some cash and prescription medications and a first aid kit.
One very simple step that people can take is to register their mobile phones with Alert San Diego so that they receive evacuation notifications quickly from local law enforcement. Preparing for disasters doesn't really have to be complicated or expensive. It's just a matter of a few simple, easy steps.
What happened to Aaron's in-laws on that day in 2007 is a tragic reminder that a little bit of preparation can preserve a lifetime of memories.
Go ahead, Jack.
For Aaron and her family, there's now comfort in knowing they're prepared.
My peace of mind is based on the fact that I know that if I was given 15 minutes to leave, I would be able to concentrate on the health and safety of my family and not what I need to bring with me.
Just a little bit of preparation can mean so much.
You crazy kids.
If you have to grab and go. In the County News Center, I'm Suzanne Bartol.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, September 11th, 2015. I'm Mary Sherman. Our news covers stories from around the globe, including a commitment to bring more Syrian refugees to America, but is it enough? The nation marks 14 years since the September 11th terrorist attacks, and a federal court, not sweet, on a bee-killing pesticide. Leading our news, a photo of a toddler who died trying to flee his war-torn home in Syria has sparked worldwide concern for refugees seeking safety in Europe. On Thursday, President Barack Obama directed his administration to prepare to take in at least 10,000 Syrian refugees over the next year. It's the first specific commitment from the United States toward increasing its acceptance of refugees from the war-torn country. As Mona Shand reports, some members of the Syrian American community are urging the public and policymakers not to ignore the root of the crisis.
Mona Jundi of Flint is one of the leaders of the Michigan-based advocacy group United for a Free Syria. She says compassion alone isn't a permanent solution.
Everybody's talking about the refugee crisis as if this is some sort of humanitarian natural disaster. There was some sort of earthquake or flood. And yes, we have to treat the symptoms. Yes, we should be taking in more refugees, but we need to stop the cause.
Jundi says people can help address the immediate needs of the refugees by donating to U.S.-based international aid organizations. However, she stresses that long-term policy changes are needed to put an end to the war causing the mass exodus.
Senate Democrats delivered a major victory to President Obama on Thursday when they blocked a Republican resolution to reject a six-nation nuclear accord with Iran, assuring that the landmark deal would take effect without a veto showdown between Congress and the White House. A procedural vote fell short of the number needed to break a Democratic filibuster. It culminated hours of debate on the Senate floor and capped months of discord since the U.S., Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China announced the agreement with Iran in July. The 9/11 families, survivors, first responders, and others will gather at Ground Zero today for the 14th anniversary of the terrorist attacks. The names of those who died in the 2001 and 1993 attacks on the World Trade Center will be read aloud. On Thursday, a new memorial was dedicated and opened to the public in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The center uses photos, videos, artifacts, and interactive displays to tell the story of Flight 93, the only plane among the four taken by terrorists that failed to reach its intended target on September 11, 2001. People across the nation are being asked to help others in their communities as part of a broader effort to make the September 11th anniversary a National Day of Service. Troy Wild has more on an effort in Nevada.
Hillary Gray with AARP Nevada says about 70 volunteers are helping to pack meals at the Three Square Food Bank in Las Vegas as part of September being Hunger Action Month, but also in recognition of the 9/11 anniversary. She says AARP has long advocated for September 11th to become a national day of service.
So our national office in Washington, D.C., all of their employees participate in service projects and in state offices across the country.
She says that September being Hunger Action Month is a natural fit because, one in six Nevadans are considered food insecure. That means they don't always have enough food to eat.
Workers and union organizers were cheering in New York City Thursday as Governor Andrew Cuomo announced his latest minimum wage proposal.
First, the governor announced that the State Department of Labor has officially approved the recommendation to raise the minimum wage for fast food workers to $15 an hour. But then he went a step further, saying that if fast food workers deserve a raise, then so do construction workers, home health care aides, and taxi cab drivers.
Every working man and woman in the state of New York deserves $15 an hour as a minimum wage.
Cuomo will be asking the legislature to pass a bill increasing the wage from the current $8.75 an hour, phasing it in over 3 years in New York City and 6 years for the rest of the state, the same schedule as the raise for fast food workers. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration finalized two rules on Thursday requiring human and animal food companies to identify possible food safety hazards and outline steps to prevent or minimize them. The rules are the first of seven proposed following the passage of the Food Safety Modernization Act. The new rules are related to the processing of foods like peanut butter and ice cream. A separate rule on fresh produce is not expected to become final until later this year. About 48 million Americans a year become sick from foodborne diseases, and 3,000 die, according to federal data. Some consumer groups say the need is urgent. Just this week, federal health authorities said an outbreak of salmonella, most likely caused by cucumbers imported from Mexico, had sickened over 340 people in 30 states. A win for beekeepers, their bees, and consumers after a federal court overturns the EPA's approval of sulfoxaflor, an insecticide that pollinators say is bad for their honeybee colonies. More from Greg Stottlemyre.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals blocked the use of the Dow chemical insecticide Thursday, ruling the EPA failed to do reliable studies on the pesticide's impact. Michelle Cottleby is with the Pollinator Stewardship Council, one of the groups that filed the suit.
EPA did not follow through with its own requirements of getting scientific-based evidence to prove that the pesticide was not going to adversely impact pollinators.
There is a waiting period before the decision is final, and Dow could ask for a rehearing.
I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guests are from Visionary Dance Theater. I have with me Mickey Monerath, the business director, and Spencer John Powell, the artistic director. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Spencer, let's start with you. You were a career dancer, I understand. Tell us what your vision was in starting Visionary Dance Theater.
Well, I sought out to start Visionary Dance Theater, which is a professional dance company, and its school, Visionary School of Performing Arts, to give opportunity to underprivileged youth the opportunity to study in a professional setting with professionals at a very low cost, and our scholarship-sponsored programs that we have through our education fund.
Marvelous. And I understand that you know firsthand how important it is for young people to get those kind of opportunities. Can you share a little bit of your own background?
Yes. I grew up in a very low-income family, a single mother who couldn't afford these things. When I was about 8 years old, wanting to be on stage and perform and dance and those kinds of things, the lessons were too much for mom. So I was able to find sponsors or have people sponsor me through my youth as a child. From 8 to about 18 years old, I was able to participate in programs for free, which enabled me to go to college, being one of the first ones in my family to graduate high school and go to college. So it was a big deal for me, and I wanted to contribute and give back, and I realized that there were many youth out there that were very, very talented and just were lacking the training or the place to be where they could express their artistic selves. So it was very important to me to open up a performing arts institution where we could provide these services to our children and young adults who might be missed or overlooked, and have them expressing that kind of talent and getting that kind of training. So that's what we specialize in.
What a wonderful mission that you have there. And I understand your own career, you danced all over the place.
That's correct. I've traveled all over the country, being able to perform. Of course, I'm from Utah, and so my beginnings began there, of course. I performed with such institutions as Utah Musical Theater. I've performed with Penny Dunnelston, who is a former ballet dancer with the New York City Ballet, another language performing arts company, Ogden Contemporary Dance Theater, just to name a few.
Magnificent. Mickey, you also do outreach to the schools, I understand. Can you share some details on that?
Yes, as part of our mission to share the performing arts with the community, we additionally do outreach with the public schools. So currently we are doing outreach with Point Loma High School. We have our professionals go into their performing arts department and participate, whether it's in choreography or providing direction. This provides a great opportunity for the kids to work with professional performing artists, and it can be very inspiring for them, especially if they're looking for a, you know, life on the stage or in the performing arts.
So I understand that right now you're located on the border of East San Diego and La Mesa, so you're serving both the East County as well as the San Diego communities. Can you tell us, Spencer, about some of the types of dance and theater experiences that your students are learning?
Yes. We have a comprehensive ballet program from the ages of 8 years old to 19 with the Visionary Youth Ballet, which is led by our education and outreach coordinator, Kiona Darlin. And we have, of course, the Visionary Dance Theater itself, which is a professional dance company of 6 members. And we have the Visionary Youth Theater, which mostly produces musicals, and that's from the ages of 18 to 19 as well. And we also have the Visionary Community Theater, which consists of semi-professional to professional adults. We also include parents of some of our children in the Visionary Community Theater unit as well. And of course, we have modern dance, tap, hip hop, vocal lessons, acting, scene study, you name it, we do it there. One of our next big goals is to form and start the Visionary Youth Orchestra.
Wow.
Which we have been talking about for the past year and a half, and hope to receive funding to get that going.
Let's talk about funding for a moment. Now, you mentioned that your specialty really is helping reach out and give opportunities to disadvantaged young people who are talented but might not otherwise have the opportunity to develop those wonderful talents as you yourself were able to do growing up. Where do you get your funding from?
Mostly from citizens of San Diego and San Diego County.
You're nonprofit.
We're nonprofit. Before productions, I write letters, I do whatever I need to do to solicit funds from individuals.
So it's largely individual philanthropists at this point?
Yes, at this point. We are now writing grants, trying to get funding through grant writing. But right now, we have an education fund set up where people can go in and donate. Some of our donors come in and they fund specific students and pay their tuition.
Oh, wow.
We also have sponsors who sponsor and pay for private lessons for our students. And people just come in and generously donate to our education fund, which has been a blessing. More than half of our students are on scholarship or sponsored. And the other percentage, which is probably about 40% of our student base, they're paid paid customers, but we have such a low fee that those parents, like I have to mention, the parents that are our paying customers also double up and not only pay their children's tuition, but also help us out in making sure other children are covered as well.
It sounds like a tremendous program for the community. Mickey, I understand that there are some shows coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about what's on the agenda?
Sure. In September, on September 10th, we open up Hairspray, which is our visionary community theater, as well as our visionary youth theater that's over at the Performing Arts Center at Point Loma High School, who is one of our outreach partners.
And Spencer, for listeners who may not be familiar with Hairspray, can you tell us a little bit about the show?
Well, Hairspray takes place in 1962 in Baltimore, right during the racial tension of that time. It's a show that's about segregation and trying to integrate. 1962 was that era when, at that time when we were still kind of in the 50s, but
Civil rights movement.
Yes. And change was in the air.
Yeah.
And so that was that turning point in 1962 where the youth were starting to stand up against the establishment of that time and trying to integrate things such as schools and Hairspray. That particular storyline, it's a television show, a dance television show reminiscent of, American Bandstand kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so it's filled with a lot of dancing, a lot of humor, and some serious moments to really think about it. And we chose this particular show for the reasons that are happening today in the news.
I was just going to say, I think those issues are resonating once again today with all the headlines we're seeing about racial tensions and police violence and so forth around the nation.
Yeah.
I would imagine there would be a lot of interest, again, in the topics that, these sort of timeless topics that that show raises.
Yes. And there were just issues just several months ago in Baltimore, the same kind of issues like history repeating itself almost.
Yeah, that's right. Mickey, what else do you have coming up?
So also coming up in on October 16th and 17th is Visionary Dance Theater's Fall Dance Concert titled Shades, over in La Mesa at the Kauai Sun Studio.
Ah. Now, tell us about that show.
Well, we have two exciting guest artists. One is the internationally acclaimed choreographer Jean Travers, who came down just about a month ago to set her piece, One Drop, on the Professional Dance Company. And that piece is about the California water crisis, the drought that we're going through. So it's pretty relevant for today's time. It just got off of a run in China and will be making its California debut here with Visionary Dance Theater. We also have Natalia Verlerdi, who will be doing a work of hers from her graduate school days called Garden Five. So we're excited about those two guest artists joining us. And, of course, the beautiful, wonderful, talented Visionary Dancers will be presenting those works.
That sounds like a delightful performance. How many years has Visionary Dance Theater been around?
We've been here for 6 years. Okay. August 1st is our 6th year anniversary.
Very good. And I understand that you've grown so much, you're just bursting at the seams and looking to find a new location. Now, full disclosure, listeners, East County Magazine has talked with them about the possibility of some shared studio space as we're expanding also. But tell us about where you're hoping to go and what the vision for the new space would be.
We are just busting at the seams there at our current location. Our population has grown. It's just been crazy. So we are looking to move to Center Drive, right across from the Grossmont Center, which would provide us additional studio space, give us other people who would come in and join and share the space with us.
Well, very good. So you'd be right here in the heart of East County.
Yes. And we would title the new space Visionary Movement and Business Center.
That sounds very exciting. Looking ahead, what is your vision, each of you? If you were to look ahead 5 years, 10 years, 20 years for Visionary Dance Theater, what do you hope to see happen?
Well, I would like to see, now in our 6th year, we are seeing people grow. Our teenagers are becoming adults and becoming our teachers and working at the studio. I would like see the mission grow and to see more children and young people come into our studios who are maybe hidden over there in the corners because they can't get into the other establishments and bring them forth and share their talent. of course, growing more and bringing in other artists from around the country to share their expertise with our young people.
So bringing in some well-known, established artists, famous names perhaps?
Oh, yes, we would love to do that. That's, of course, on the forefront of our vision right now is to get people. Right now we're working on the gala. We're working on some big-name artists to come out. We're talking to some agents. And of course, everything is about the helping of our young people. So we ask people to come at very little price or for free or donate their time to give exposure to our young people. So
that sounds like an amazing cause. And it's just so nice to see someone doing something in the arts, especially given all the cutbacks we've seen in the public schools where arts, unfortunately, seems to be the first thing to go when there are budget cuts. So it's great that you're creating these opportunities for young people to get experience in the arts and to shine and to grow and to pursue actual careers in the arts. Mm-hmm. Mickey, where can people go to get more information about Visionary Dance Theater if they're interested in lessons for their children or getting involved or volunteering or perhaps being a donor or a philanthropist themselves to underwrite one of these talented young people?
Yes, you can visit our current studio at 7202 El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego, or you can just go online at www.visionarydancetheater.org. That's theater spelled with a R-E instead of an E-R.
Very good. I'm going to let you have the last word. What else would you like our listeners to know that I haven't already asked you about Visionary Dance Theater?
I think every time we're exposed to the public, they're quite surprised at the abundance of talent that we have at Visionary. These young people are just some of the most amazing individuals I've been able to work with. In their time at Visionary, we have seen some of our performers go to the Broadway stage.
Really?
Yes, and we have a young man now whose movie is opened on Tuesday.
Fantastic. What's the movie?
The movie Sinister. He's a little kid. He won't be able to watch the movie that he's in, but he will be in a new HBO series.
Wow.
That's premiering this fall. He's also in Hairspray, so you can catch him in Hairspray. So it's just a wonderful blessing to see our young people working in television, commercials, movies, and bigger and better theater programs, as well as dance programs all over the country. So that's been the neatest thing that I think people should know that's happening here in their community, and just to know that these young people really do shine, and I'm so proud of them. None of our students have a GPA of under 3.5. Most of them are 4 point or better.
So these are smart kids
and they're talented. I just don't know how they accomplish these things sometimes because they're at the studio pretty much 5 to 6 days a week in classes, rehearsals, and those kinds of things. But when they're not being worked on stage, they're in the corner doing their homework. I'm just very proud, and we're very lucky and blessed to have these young people around.
Those are such inspirational stories, and I really want to thank both of you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, to share your success stories there at the Visionary Dance Theater.
Yes, thank you for having us out, Miriam.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson. Bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features a barbecue at Santee Lakes, live musical theater productions, the Sequan Powwow, and a bluegrass festival in Santee.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the Julian Music Festival, the opening of the Silver Anniversary season of the Poway Performing Arts Center, featuring Kenny Loggins, as well as some major fall festivals, including Julian Apple Days, Fall Fest, and, of course, Oktoberfest.
So, stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
The Santee Lakes Foundation invites you to enjoy Carbecue at Santee Lakes, a day of classic cars, bikes, antique tractors, and farm equipment, plus barbecue, food, live entertainment, and fun for the entire family. The event takes place on Saturday, October 10th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Visionary Community Theater and Visionary Youth Theater of East San Diego present Hairspray at the Performing Arts Center at Point Loma High School on September 10th through the 12th and 17th through the 19th at 7 p.m. Enjoy as the diverse and talented visionary cast and crew welcome you to the 60s. It's 1962. The 50s are out and change is in the air. Baltimore's Tracy Turnblad, a big girl with big hair and an even bigger heart, has only one passion, to dance. She wins a spot on the local TV dance program and overnight is transformed from outsider to irrepressible teen celebrity. But can a trendsetter in dance and fashion vanquish the program's reigning princess, win the heart of heartthrob Link Larkin, and integrate a television show without denting her due? For tickets, visit visionarycommunitytheater.com.
Off-Broadway Live in Santee will present One Hit Wonder, a dinner theater production about a group that sang other people's songs until they had their own hit. Just one hit. This story brings to life the music of Neil Diamond, Kenny Rogers, Eddie Rabbit, Dionne Warwick, Roberta Flack, Olivia Newton-John, the Eagles, and so many more. The event includes a fully catered dinner and beverages. The live combo plays great dinner music, then Bob and Steve, with musical guests, singing the songs of the best singers and songwriters of all time. Off-Broadway Live is on Cuyamaca Street in Santee. See more at offbroadwaylive.com.
The Sequon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its 26th annual powwow September 11th through 13th at the tribe's powwow grounds behind the casino on the Sequon Reservation in El Cajon. Dancers from across the nation will compete for prize money at the powwow, which also features bird singing and, for Native American children, peon games. Crafts, food, and vendors will be on hand at the powwow, which is free and open to the public. For details, see the Sequon Powwow page on Facebook.
The twang of banjos and fiddles will again fill the air, while delicious food and beverages fill appetites at the 6th annual Santee Bluegrass Festival on September 12th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. The one-night festival is a fundraiser that benefits local teen programs, park improvement projects, and the city's recreation scholarship program that subsidizes fees for less fortunate children, families, and seniors. The event takes place at Town Center Community Park East. This year's lineup features two talented bluegrass bands, Box Canyon and High Mountain Road. Admission includes wine and beer sampling, plus tastes of food prepared by local restaurants. This event usually sells out quickly, so organizers advise music lovers not to fiddle around. Tickets are available at City of Santee's website or at Santee City Hall.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. The 2015 Julian Music Festival will celebrate its 46th anniversary on September 19th with a diverse lineup of musical acts and a new event beneficiary, the California Wolf Center in Julian. The festival will take place from 1 to 6:30 p.m. on the grounds of the Mangini Winery in Julian. This year's festival will feature a varied collection and blends of musical genres including Latin jazz, adult contemporary, alternative folk, Celtic, and more. For tickets and details, visit julianmusicfestival.com.
Poway On Stage, the foundation that supports the Poway Performing Arts Center, will present Blue Sky Riders in an acoustic concert to open the center's silver anniversary season. The show will take stage on Sunday, September 20th at 7 p.m., featuring Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Kenny Loggins and Nashville songsmiths Gary Burr and Georgia Middleman. Blue Sky Riders combine harmonies with elements of country, pop, and Americana. For tickets and details on the full season lineup, you can go to powwayonstage.org.
As part of Julian's Apple Days celebration, a two-day Apple Days festival will be held September 26th and 27th at Mangini Winery, featuring apple displays, music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contests, and of course, apple pie. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday. The coronation of Mr. and Mrs. Apple Days will be held on Saturday. The event began back in 1909 with apple ranchers celebrating their harvests. Back then, the event included an all-night dance at the town hall and trick riding by local horsemen, drawing about 2,000 people. Today, Julian celebrates its apple season for a full 2 months, drawing tens of thousands of people with the festivities culminating in the Apple Day celebration, September 26th and 27th. The same weekend, you can also enjoy an Oktoberfest in downtown Julian and melodrama performances by Julian's Doves and Desperados, as well as the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous with historical reenactors just down the hill in Santa Isabel. For details, visit julianca.com.
The German-American Societies of San Diego will host their traditional Oktoberfest the first 2 weekends in October on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, October 2nd through the 4th, October 9th through the 11th in El Cajon. You can enjoy authentic German food and barbecue, a variety of German pastries, and authentic German music. There are also vendor and craft booths as well as Kids Fun Zone. This annual celebration will be located at the German American Society's headquarters at 1017 South Mollison Avenue in El Cajon. For more information, visit OktoberfestElCajon.com.
La Mesa's Chamber of Commerce will present Fall Fest, a new festival to be held October 16th and 17th at Grossmont Center in La Mesa. This event features country and rock and roll musical artists, including Brent Payne, winner of the Best Country Song of the Year award at the Hollywood Music Awards in 2012 for his hit single, Now and Forever. He's nominated again this year for his song, Midnight Prayer. A beer garden, food, and more are also part of the fall festivities at this event. For more information on Fall Fest, visit lamesachamber.net.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Tasha Matthews with East County Magazine. National Weather Service forecasters are predicting a wet winter in San Diego due to the probability of a strong El Nino, perhaps the strongest since records began in 1950. An El Nino occurs as a result of warming ocean surface waters, which release heat into the atmosphere over the Pacific, creating a chain reaction that can result in cloud formation, storms, and heavy rainfall. In Spanish, the term El Nino means the Christ Child, so named because fishermen off the west coast of South America noticed the Pacific Ocean waters often tended to warm around Christmas time. While the El Nino will likely help alleviate the drought-parched Southern California, a single wet winter is not expected to end the four-year drought, the worst in the state's history. For more information on El Nino update, visit climate.gov.
The National Safety Council has announced some startling data about America's roads. They released a report on Monday estimating that traffic deaths for the first 6 months of 2015 were up 14% over the same period during the previous year, with serious injuries up 30%. Approximately 19,000 deaths have occurred on U.S. roads from January through June of this year. Some of the increase has been attributed to an improvement in the economy and lower gas prices. The uptick in the economy leads to more drivers on the roads going to and from work, according to the report. However, even with more drivers on the road, this increase is startling. If the trend continues, 2015 could be the deadliest year since 2007, when there were over 41,000 people killed in traffic crashes, according to the Department of Transportation's National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. The NSC recommends the following for safer driving. Make sure every passenger buckles up on every trip. Designate an alcohol and drug-free driver or arrange alternate transportation. Get plenty of sleep and take regular breaks to avoid fatigue. Never use a cell phone behind the wheel, even hands-free. Stay engaged in teens' driving habits. Teens are three times as likely to crash as more experienced drivers. Learn about your vehicle safety systems and how to use them. MyCarDoesWhat.org can help drivers understand the ins and outs of features such as adaptive cruise control, blind spot warning systems, and backup cameras. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space,
to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Boykel, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.